Now on Sky Sports Radio, it's time to chinwag with Cozzy.
24 to 11, looking forward as always to a chinwag, and today I'm catching up with Brett Bellamy. Morning, Brett, how are you?
Morning, Cozzy.
Fantastic to catch up with you, and yeah, a little venture down to Taree the other day, I think it was, with one runner, and we thought, what? Well, oh, he's going all the way there. We found out because it won.
Yes, that was quite nice to have a winner down there at Taree, and boys that bred that fella and new owners to the camp started them off on a winning note. So hopefully that role continues.
Well, they'd be excited if they're new owners and their first horse. That's a wonderful experience.
I wouldn't say first horse for one of the fellas. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Now, Brett, looking back through your background, racing, we always wonder where you started off. Was the family involved in racing, or are you the odd man out?
Oh, no. Back in the dark old days, Dad had a horse dry stock transport business that he ran out of Hawkesbury. Mum and Dad and the kids lived in a caravan on Hawkesbury Racecourse back in the dark old days. And then we moved from there to Richmond, or North Richmond, and we were there for a few years. And as fate would have it, Dad always said that he would own the Clarendon Hotel one day, or the Aerodrome Hotel, which is just alongside Hawkesbury Racecourse. So, so we moved in there and sort of being so close to the racecourse there, sort of, I suppose, the interest sort of grew. And I suppose my teachers think I had the worst piece of anybody, because there was always a letter went in when the Hawkesbury races were on, please excuse Brett from school this afternoon, as he has a dental appointment. So,
so you're a regular at the dentist, were you?
A regular at the dentist, but it was even better when they had a night trot meeting that coincided with the Hawkesbury race meeting as well. So that was all very good.
There you go. Looking back to the transport days with your dad, in those days, were they using floats or was it trucks? What were they doing?
No, Dad was one of the first ones to have a backloading float that he had. Johnny Allen, I think, or Gerald built that. And so back in the darker days, most of them were side loaders, but Dad was one of the very first that had a backloading horse float. So, Dad was one of the innovators in that sort of transport back then.
Was it racehorses purely, or just general stock that he was transporting?
No, basically racehorses. He was carting horses around for a lot of fellas that probably are no longer here, and probably a lot of people in the racing game now wouldn't have even sort of remember them, like Ray Guy. He used to cart horses around for Ray. He used to cart horses around for Maury Anderson, Miles Sherd. Even Clary Connors, he used to cart horses around for Clary back to Kembla and in the dark old days. So, he carted for a lot of prominent horse trainers back in the dark old days.
It's interesting, Brett, you mentioned the family living in a caravan there at the racecourse, and in those days that sort of lifestyle wasn't all that uncommon, was it?
No, definitely not. You know, families back then, Mum and Dad sort of were workers, so there wasn't a great deal of money around, so everyone just had to do what they could do.
Now, you got the Hawkesbury. From your point of view, obviously you love the races, you love getting along to the harness race and the trots, as we used to call them in those days. Was there ever a desire to be a jockey or a harness driver?
As you know, I'm not built for the jockey side of things. but no, not really. We were sort of more, back in those days, we were more into the showing side of things and the hacking and the cross-country stuff and whatnot. Basically all that sort of stuff was interested back in the dark old days. But I suppose it did grow on me sort of being around the hotel and mixing with the trainers and the stable hands. So we did have a lot more involvement in the racing game.
What was your introduction to the racing? Where did you first start?
A fella walked into the pub and offered Dad a rather large sum of money to buy the hotel. So he always said to the day he died that it was the worst mistake he ever made selling it. Just before that, we'd come to Coffs Harbour to look at a hack. And we come up here to visit Gerald Flick and Wendy Smith, and we bought that horse and moved him back to Sydney, or back to the Hawkesbury, and that was all good. And then, as I said, the sale for the pub went through, and it was the family discussion of where will we go, or where do we want to move to, and we liked it so much at Coffs Harbour, we ended up, we moved to Coffs Harbour, and we've been here basically ever since.
So when you got to Coffs, had you taken out, had you been working as a stable hand or anything like that at the time?
No. I come up here and I said, well, we bought all the ponies and whatnot, all the hacks, and the show industry and gymkhanas, and that was very much in its infancy. And we sort of went to those and felt that unless you were on the right side of the fence, you didn't have a show in. So it was, you know, the old story, not what you know, it's who you know. So Dad and Ted McCabe hatched a bit of a plan to have our first foray into the racing industry. So Dad went to Sydney to buy me a car. But as fate would have it, that car arrived on a Brisbane horse transport truck. So, at least I said to Dad when it arrived, it had four on the floor. But so the car had to come after that.
So when it arrived, this particular horse, had it raced? What was the story behind it?
Yeah, no, she'd raced, and Sir John Austin owned her and whatnot, and she wasn't one of the city class horses, and Ted was of the opinion that we'd have a lot of fun with her up here. So at that stage, and it was probably very apt, the name that she was called, her name was Bold Expense. So and we had a lot of fun with her, and so she was our first foray into racing up here.
So who trained her? Did you guys train her, or did you get someone to train her?
No, my father took out a licence, because obviously I wasn't quite old enough back then. So Dad took out a licence, and we were training them, you know, from our property on South Bowambi Road, and taking them to Bowambi Beach from there, and most mornings, and come to the track and gallop mornings, which is back then was just Tuesdays here at Coffs Harbour. So we did all that.
So your dad went straight from basically the hacks and just the general horses to say, we'll buy a horse, I'll take out an owner, trainer permit and train it myself.
Yeah, basically that.
So did he have much knowledge of racing, or was it just learned as he went?
Oh, basically he left a lot of it up to us, because we'd been through the pony club system and had a lot of knowledge sort of imparted on us through instructors and things through the pony club world. And there's sort of a lot of the old trainers and that we'd been tangled up with through the years said, you know, it's basically common sense. Feed them well, work them hard, and the rest will sort of look after themselves.
Have you found that theory's changed over the years?
Not really. I think it's pretty well the same. It's all feed and work related. If the horse is eating well, you can give him a bit more work. If he's not eating well, you've got to back off.
When you look at feeding these days, Brett, back in the old days, you'd have the oat and chaff and the corn and so forth and bran and mix it up, wet feeds and dry feeds and goodness knows what, and measure it all yourself according to the horses. These days there's a lot of prepared products around. Which do you favour?
I use a lot of horsepower products. They're very good, and I find them, you know, they do the job for me. I've had a bit of success with them, and hopefully they've had a bit of success through me. But I like their feeds. The horses, more importantly, their horses like them. So, and that's the main aim. If they're eating well, we're doing well.
Now, this horse you kicked off with your dad, did it get the money? Did you win races?
Yeah, no, she won races. I'm not sure how many. She won about five, I think. But she happened to win one day here at Coffs Harbour in an 800-metre race. And I just happened to be in hospital with a broken leg off through a fall off one. And the only instruction I gave my brother was to how much to put on and what to do and what not to do. And he needless to say, he didn't follow the instructions very well.
What happened?
He didn't put the money on, did he?
And when's he get out of hospital?
No, it was all good. I couldn't go very far. But I had conned one of the stewards at the hospital to wheel me across the road in a wheelchair, because back then the hospital was just on the top of the hill overlooking Coffs Harbour Racecourse. So I did see the race and we had a cheer and said, well, we can take me back home, we've got the money. And needless to say, the brother came with the bad news that he hadn't put the money on. So, but anyway.
Chin Wagon with Brett Bellamy this morning. Brett, that was the first horse. How long did it take before you started to pick up a few more and outside owners?
We were sort of pretty well sort of straight away. We picked up the odd horse because Dad threw in his racing mates in Sydney. When they weren't quite good enough, they'd bring Dad up, Kevin, and say, Kevin, we've got this horse down here. We're just going to send him up. So We had a turnover of horses, and we never had many. We only had about half a dozen because it was just too hard to go from South Bowambi to Bowambi Beach and back and whatnot. So we just did that. And we had quite a successful team. You know, we're basically associated with Miles Sherd. He used to send them up quite regular. And then we sort of become a little bit involved with Hyperion, because you may or may not know, but Hyperion thoroughbreds were hatched in the bar at the Aerodrome Hotel. So
fair dinkum.
Yeah, so we got a few horses sent on up for Hyperion thoroughbreds.
They would have provided you with some beautifully bred ones, I imagine.
Definitely. A little horse that I remember and are very fond memories of him is a little fella by Sir Dapper called Kaleidoscope, and we had a lot of fun with him.
Now, over the years, you've had a lot of fun with it. With one jockey, I reckon, you guys have combined for a lot of wins, and that's Raymond Spokes.
Yeah, Raymond, George and myself have been associated for probably about 15 years. I know he's ridden in excess of 200-odd winners for me, so there's 200 winners. There's a lot of place getters to go with them.
You don't often see partnerships or relationships like that last that long. A lot of marriages don't last that long.
Oh, definitely. We've had our disagreements over the years, which every sort of marriage is the same. So, but we've always managed to work them out, and hopefully it's going on for years to come.
What is it you like about Ray when you put him on?
His honesty and his reliability. He's here rain, hail, sign, sick, dying or otherwise every morning. So it's a big, big load off my mind knowing that he's going to be here.
That's fantastic, isn't it? Someone like that who you know is there, as you said, whatever's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. And he's always quick to put his 2 cents worth in, and which is always invaluable to us. You know, it's a team effort, and without the team working together, you don't get a result at the end.
Now, Brett, I'm chin wagging with Brett Bellamy. Brett, you've got a couple of young guys here at the moment who are young Korean apprentices. Tell us a story about them and how they came to be with you.
A couple of years ago, a fellow called Alex Rowe came to me through the advice of Jeff Kruger from Lyndhurst Stud, because they'd been involved in a few Korean boys coming out there helping them on the stud, and they had a few troubles getting boys in Queensland to get to the racetrack. And they just wanted to get them on the racetrack and give them the experience of riding in Australia, because they felt, Australian racing is, up there with the best in the world. So they thought it'd be a very good experience for them to, pick up a few pointers from the Australian jockeys. But unfortunately, they couldn't quite, through a bit of red tape and everything else, get them on the track. So then they approached me to see whether I could do anything for them. Being a country area, they thought it might be a little bit easier to get them on the racetrack. So we've contacted Racing New South Wales, and through the help of Maurice Logue and Malcolm Fitzgerald and the stewards, we formulated a plan to sort of be able to get them here and give them a bit of experience before they went back to Korea.
So what's the plan with them, Brett? How long will they stay, these young guys?
Generally, they stay for about 3 to 4 months.
Mm.
And they spend the first month having barrier trials, and once they've trialed to the satisfaction of the stewards, they give them a license, and then they sort of hear, and they've got to abide by the same rules and regulations as our apprentice jockeys. So they don't get any easy rides. They've still got to be pulled into line when they pull into line, and sort of, their language barrier is always a little bit hard, but they generally try and pick it up the best they can.
Yeah, I was going to mention that because Eric Chung's been out here, right? He came out with Gordon York, and I think when Eric arrived, his command of the English language was very, very limited.
Yes, but he's improved quite well. Eric was from Hong Kong, and as most people would have heard of him by now, Matthew Chadwick, he spent 12 months with me, but he could speak English like we could, but he was adopted into an English family, so his father and mother were both English teachers in Hong Kong, so he was very easy because he spoke like we did. So that was a very easy one, that one.
Now, looking at jockeys over the years, there's one that you'd look back and I reckon every now and then you'd have a little tear in your eye when you think of Daniel Baker.
Very much so. It's one of the few races that I haven't been able to win here at Coffs Harbour since it was named after Daniel. It's always been there and you always remember him, so especially this time of the year, because it was about now that he was killed.
I said it'd be one of those very emotional times, because I know it really knocked you about at the time.
Yeah, no, it does, and it still does talking about it. So it's a long time, but it's still very emotional. And like, he was a very, very good kid, and he had weight troubles. And I know he would have been, you know, because if you speak about his track record and his percentage rate of riders to winners, it was always very good. And generally, he took the opportunity, and whatever he got the opportunity to ride, he always, you know, as a rule, gave it the best opportunity in a race. Mm. And more often than not, he won on them.
Now, looking back at horses you've had over the years, you've had some very handy horses. Which one, if you lined them all up, which would be the first one you'd pat?
Oh, I suppose probably the best one that I've had, or potentially the best one, and we touched on it the other day, is a horse that was named Intent Wonder. And you say, well, that doesn't sound much different but to any other one, but he's the one that he won a bell and a bracelet. But fortunately, the Racing New South Wales and the stud book or registrar weren't happy with his original name.
What was that?
Sapura Evad, which, you know, as you said, what's wrong with that? Well, spelt backwards, it was Dave, are you pissed? So someone took offence to that, so they made us change his name. So he became Intent Wonder. But not before he'd won a race. He won the Bell and a Bracelet Prelude as Sapura Evad. So, but before he went round in the Bell and a Bracelet, we had to change his name. So it got changed across to Intent Wonder. But unbeknownst to a lot of tab outlets and all those sort of places, they put him up in the tab on the form guides as a first starter.
Oh dear.
So, needless to say, a first starter in those days in a Bell and a Bracelet, because it was a very, you know, strong race, because a lot of the horses in that race were horses that were just getting ready for the Magic Millions or a last year's effort to earn a bit of prize money to get them into the Magic Millions race. So it was a very strong race. And the funny part of it about it was he just was a first starter, but Barry Courtney, in his wisdom, had tipped him to Sylvie's mate at Hamilton. And needless to their surprise, when they rung him up, I thought you told us to back Sapura Evad. And he said, no, don't worry, this one goes just as good. back this one. So they needless to say, they've put their money on, but the price just blew and blew and blew and blew and just kept getting out the door. So he was a first starter. A first starter couldn't possibly win, but he'd already won the Bell and the Bracelet Prelude. So, needless to say, that they're very much surprised on our faces when he got out to 90-odd to 1 and duly saluted for us.
Well, you've been stiff with someone complaining about the name, because Sapura has raced as well. And if someone wants to spell them backwards, there were two that were gelded years ago, and they reminded them of them for the rest of their life. One they call Seltun. I won't say what it is backwards. The other one was Stunun backwards. And it was just a little reminder of them, the fact their back teeth had gone. Well, he was obviously very, very good. Along the way, I mean, you've had success with the Tsar Im breed, and he's unfortunately no longer with us, Tsar Im.
No, he's no longer with us, but they're a highly strung breed, but they're generally very consistent. They're good fresh horses. They really sort of fire early in the preparation. But they're pretty versatile too. They can go all sorts of distances. But I was lucky enough through Peter Wood. He secured him through a fellow that, another one of an acquaintance, Don Nancaro, who had the stud, Clearview stud down at Bylong. And he sold his property out down there. So Tsar Im was looking for a place to go. So Peter bought him or leased him. I'm not sure what the dealings were there, but he ended up back up here at Tomorrow Farms out at Mick O'Neill's out at Nana Glen.
What other size have you... do you take a liking to size, Brett? Are there any that you sort of look and think, I'd love to keep you, have a stable full of those?
Well, the one, and he's no longer with us, but sort of really sort of has a soft spot to us, the horse called Sequalo, and everyone sort of would have heard of Sequalo. And back in the dark old days, when his prospectus came out, we knew the Kruger boys, Jeff and Griff and whatnot, and we'd become it's been a long association, but Intent Wonder was by Celestial Dancer. And anyway, sort of the story went on, and they've sent us a prospectus for Sequalo. And, you know, I said to the boys, which was my father and my accountant and another partner of Dad's, we should buy a share in this. And, you know, because he's reasonably priced, I think the price was $7,500 for the share, and that was, you know, for a nomination every year for life. And so we did that, but one of the partners in the syndicate said, no, that's absolutely crazy. If you're going to buy a share in that stallion, I'm out. Well, I said, well, that's good. You're out, and I'm in. So the other that partner went on his way, and I suppose he rues his decision to get out now, because as we know, Sequalo just went on for strength to strength, and we've had a lot of handy horses, but he was just a license to print money every year. They put money in your hand every year, so that was very good.
It's interesting with stallions. You had the winner the other day, Boncosta, he's by Bonhoeffer. Some of them take a little bit of time. This bloke's a four-year-old. He hadn't trialled or raced for almost a year when you produced him first up the other day at Taree, and he's SP'd at $10. It must have been a good day, Brett.
Yes, no, it was quite a good day. There's always, but we always got to enjoy those days, because obviously being in the racing game for the time that I have been now, there's a lot more downs than ups.
When you talk of the downs, when you look back and think, what's been the worst days, the darkest days?
Oh, I think sort of, you know, when you lose one through whatever, whether he's broken down or illness or sickness or something, when you spend as much time with them as you have, like, it's always sort of very hard, you know, to lose one that you spent that much time with. And they become, let's face it, they are your friends, and they look after you, you look after them. So, you know, just losing one, and it hasn't been, you know, any particular one, but, you know, just losing anyone is always very, very hard.
Yeah, and people sometimes don't realise how attached you get to them, even the slow ones.
Oh, definitely. Because they're all characters. You know, they've all got their own personalities. They all got their likes and dislikes. And I think that's, you know, half the battle with, you know, training them. You know, I think you have a happy mind and have a happy horse, they're going to give you their best on the track. So just trying to figure out the best way to get the best out of them is sort of always a big plus if anyone that can do that.
What's been the highlight, the best day?
Oh, sort of winning races at my own Cup Carnival, which happens to be tomorrow, but yeah. always winning a race at your own Cup Carnival, it's always good. I sort of, the Cup's eluded me up until now, but close as I got with an old horse, Fiori. He's run second to Warren Skinner and the boys from the Pier Hotel and Toyota, but and Kenny Lantry, they knocked me off. So, but anyway, there's always another day.
That's it. You can just go on. These days, I look, you probably used to get around about 25 to 30 on the books there. And what's the hope of the side?
I suppose there's no real, like, there's always hope while you've got a lot of young horses. And at the moment, I have got a few young horses around, not one in particular that sort of stamps himself as, you know, standing out for the crowd. But, you know, always young horses, say you. You never do anything silly while you've got young horses in the stable. So I've got a few irons in the fire. So hopefully one of those will step up to the plate and do the right thing by us.
Finally, for punters who like to follow a Brett Bellamy horse, which one should they invest on maybe tomorrow?
I've probably got quantity, not quality.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping Tia Coney can keep on. She's won her last two back on a home track just give the Korean boy a good going away present. This is their last rides tomorrow, so they head back to Korea next weekend. So yeah, it'll be good to send him out a winner and something to go back to Korea and remember us by.
Terrific, Brett, good luck tomorrow. Great to catch up and have a chin wag, and have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much, Cozzy.
Brett Bellamy there, great to chin wag with him this morning on Sky Sports Radio.